Live out of Radio Row here at the Super Bowl, joined now by Albert Breer, Sports Illustrated, The Insider. And I got to start. So you had a report that got a ton of play in Nashville.
Okay.
And that was when Mike Borgonzi got hired as general manager of the Titans.
Yeah.
And you put in there that Borgonzi will basically have final say of the 53-man roster with the Titans. And then the people
then
locally,
I clarified it because, yeah.
Because it's like Brinker has this, and then this is Borgonzi. My sentiment is, and correct me, Chad Brinker is going to defer to Mike Borgonzi. Is that, and that's why Mike Borgonzi would leave the Chiefs to take that job.
Yeah. So,
am I wrong about that or right?
Yeah, and I think that's something that Chad had to clarify with a bunch of people. You know, when you're putting in for permission to talk to this person or that person, it's something that he did have to clarify with people, you know, like, which is, well, you're going to come take my number two. What is he going to, like, aren't you just going to have him do for you what he's already doing for me?
Sure.
You know? And so he had to clarify that a little bit because I think, like, the model they're going to is exists in other sports but is new in the NFL for the most part. And so, like, the idea is that, you know, like Chad would be like the chief tiebreaker, I guess, or whatever, when there's any sort of dispute. And that happens less than people think in NFL buildings. Generally, you know, you put so much work into picking players and signing free agents that you're not going to have these massive problems choosing, like, hey, is it this guy or that guy? We're going to pay this guy X or Y or Z. And if you do, then the thing's not going to work anyway, you know? So, you know, like Mike was basically coming in. Mike was designated as, like, or that position was had been designated as the primary football executive, which means you run the draft, you run free agency, you're the decision maker when it comes to that stuff. And so, yeah, like I Chad on paper still has the 53, but the structure remains the same as it has as it was last year. And yeah, like you said, Mike probably wouldn't leave a really good job in Kansas City to take his shot at being a general manager unless he felt like it was a real general manager job.
What do people around the league make of the fact that Brinker stayed and Rand Carthon got the boot? Cause it's kind of odd, right? He hired Brinker.
Yeah, I think the main takeaway, I think, for most people was that the ownership in Nashville is very shaky and can't make up their mind on what they want. You know, a year ago when Chad leapfrogged Rand, I think that, you know, raised some eyebrows with other teams. And then, you know, it's just sort of like this scattershot. Okay, like this year we want this and this year we want that. And, you know, when they fired J-Rob, it was like, okay, like we're going all in on Vrabel. And that year, Vrabel did have the hammer. Like that year when Rand was the first year GM and Chad was the assistant GM, like Vrabel had final say. And then that turned over when they turned over the coaching staff. And, you know, then they make the decision to move on from Rand and fill in underneath him. And so it's, you know, I think that the main takeaway most teams have looking at it is that their ownership is all over the freaking place. And do they know what they're doing? Now, I would say in Amy's defense, like she's still relatively new at some of these things, and there are lots of owners that stumble, you know, quite a bit early on, and she's certainly stumbled quite a bit early on.
Albert Breer with us here on the program. So, what do you make of Chad Brinker's position? Because I know you brought up this other sports thing. That's something the Titans have told me for like a year and a half. They're like,
yeah,
other sports. They do it this way, and in some places it's president of baseball operations and
so,
general manager.
Yeah, the idea is the job's too big for one person now. The general manager job is too big.
But I've even told the Titans this. I have a hard time being lectured that the general manager job is too hard for one person by the worst team in the league. Like, when the other teams in the league, like Howie Roseman, the job's not too big for him in Philadelphia,
yeah,
but it's too big here.
Well, I would also tell you that the Eagles have the biggest – staff in football. They've got a massive like an army of personnel people, whether it's analytics, whether it's the operations side, whether it's their player development side. Like, we're not even getting to scouting yet. Like, so you need somebody to oversee all of that, you know what I mean? Like, and that's the idea, is that, like, you know, you almost set up like a board of directors where someone's got to be the chairman, and that person, everybody's going to kind of, like, the operation's going to kind of flow up to that one person. And that's what Chad had in, you know, in Green Bay. It's sort of the role that the Mark Murphy had as the team president there, where that was sort of a football-centric team president, and Mark wasn't making football decisions, but he was overseeing it and sort of making sure everybody stayed aligned. And so they had Mark, and then they had Brian Gutekunst as the GM, Matt LaFleur as the coach, and Russ Ball, who runs the cap and runs all operations, all flowing up to the team president. That's sort of the idea, is that you have somebody who's overseeing the whole thing. Then you can hire a general manager, and instead of, and I think this is a really big key, you want to hire a guy for what he's good at and let him keep doing what he's good at, right? So if you put a guy in that job, in a traditional general manager job, and that job has become bigger and different than it ever was, and now he's spending 20% of his time on analytics and 20% of his time on medical and 20%, if his time is spread out all over the place, and he's still got to worry about, hey, who's going to cut the grass, which is like legitimately something that some of these general manager jobs entail. Sure. Well, then he's not really doing what you hired him to do. You hired him to put the team together. So I think Chad stepping into this role that oversees all of that allows for you to hire a general manager who's coming in, and he's coming in to build the team. Like, that's why he's there. It's not to do a half dozen other things that have nothing to do with, or are out, either don't have anything to do with building a team or are sort of outside his area of expertise.
It's funny because I worked with Floyd Reese for like 5 or 6 years here on the radio.
Yeah.
And I, again, I don't want to speak for him, you know, but I think he cared about who cut the grass. Like,
yeah,
that stuff like mattered. And I think now it's more like, hey man, I'm just here to put the football team together kind
yeah
of stuff. Like, it's more
yeah
sectioned out that way. Albert Breer with us. Where's Callahan fit in all this? Because he wasn't hired really by Brinker, though Brinker was part of the committee that hired him. Wasn't hired by Borgonzi. It feels to me like, again, you brought up the Packers. They want to be the Packers. Big Mike McCarthy's warming up in the bullpen for somebody. I mean, is Callahan kind of a lame duck coach?
I don't think he's a lame duck coach, but there's a lot on the line for him this year. I do think they have some sympathy for the situation that he was in last year, and I think a big part of it is like feeling like they didn't do enough to support him, you know. And so you had a guy who, he's first-time play caller and a first-time head coach. He's learning to do those two things. Meanwhile, you have a first-time offensive coordinator, a first-time defensive coordinator, a first-time special teams coordinator. You had his dad on the staff as a former head coach, but you weren't backstopped by a ton of experience anywhere there.
Sure.
You know, and I think back to like, you know, Sean McVay in Los Angeles, where that first year he was able to sort of farm the defense out to Wade Phillips and didn't have to really worry about it as much, you know. I just think, like, again, like, there was the sense I got was, like, Cali's a really bright coaching prospect, and they view him that way, who had a bumpy first year because he had to learn a lot of stuff on the job, and maybe we didn't provide him with the safety nets that he needed to adjust, and hopefully he's better for it, but we paid a price for it last year. That doesn't mean, like, okay, like, go, you know, be the worst team in the league again and you'll be fine. That's not what I'm saying, you know, but I do think that there's a feeling like that all the things they hired him for, which I think anybody would tell you who's been around him, like, he has, like, a lot of the qualities you'd want in a head coach. Like, with some experience, he'll get there.
But then, so I hear that.
Yeah.
But he didn't change the defensive coordinator. He didn't change the offensive
yep
coordinator. Now,
yep,
he did what they did on special teams by going and getting Bones Fossil is what they should have done, in my opinion, on defense. That they should have gone and gotten a veteran defensive coordinator.
Yeah.
And to your point, you know, Vic Fangio, here's the defense, take it. Wade Phillips, here's the defense, take it. Brian Flores, here's the defense, take it. And I don't feel like Denard Wilson has the experience for them to say, okay, here's the defense, Denard Wilson.
Yeah, and I think you balance that against, like, he runs the scheme that everybody wants to run right now. Like, he's got roots in the Ravens system, which that's what Miami runs. That's what the Chargers run. That's what, you know, like, that's
Seattle.
Seattle runs. Like, it's that's the scheme that everybody wants. And so I guess you hope he can learn on the job and get where he needs to be. And I'm with you. Like, I think, like, I'd even advocate in that case for like hiring a senior defensive assistant, whoever it is, you know. Maybe you get Dean Pease to come back because Dean's got background in it. You know what I mean? But hiring some sort of senior defensive assistant might make some sense. I think Denard Wilson's a bright enough coaching prospect, and I guess I'm going to sound like a broken record because you say the same things about him you say about Cali, you know. Mm-hmm. But I do think that there's some element of like we really feel like, you know, we paid a toll for our inexperience last year, but it's going to pay off in 2025. We'll see.
Last one on the Titans for you, Albert Breer with us here on the program. Are these quarterbacks, do people really think they suck?
Yeah, it's not a great year.
And is Sam Darnold getting the tag?
I think that's up in the air. They feel really comfortable with J.J. McCarthy to the point where they may let him go to market and say, go see what you can find out there and come back to us. Like, I don't think they're throwing him out. But I don't think it will be the end of the world for them if they had to go with J.J. McCarthy based on how fast his rehab has come along of late, like after the second cleanup surgery. And so, you know, I think there's certainly a possibility that, you know, whatever it is, is it the second or third Monday in March?
Whenever it
like
is.
He's out there on the market and fielding offers.
Okay. So apparently,
and maybe he'd be like you'd be looking at like Baker Mayfield type of money.
See, I'd give him $40 million a year.
Yeah.
On a 4-year deal that's really a 3-year deal. Mm-hmm. And I think that would get him, and then you're done at quarterback. And then you do whatever you want with the first pick.
Yeah, I think that – yeah, I mean, the issue, like, again, like, the thing that – that colors all of this is just what's going on with the draft. And I don't know. Like, I've been doing this a long enough time to know, like, kind of pick up on the way people are talking about players and where things are kind of trending, and this – feels to me a lot like 3 years ago when Kenny Pickett was the first quarterback selected, went 20th overall, and then I don't think another quarterback went until like the end of the third round. Like, I'm not saying it's going to be quite like that, but, you know, I think digging through Cam Ward will be an interesting process for a lot of people, and I think getting to a comfort level with him will be a process. And with Shadur, I think he's sort of an open book, and you sort of know who he is, like, personality-wise, toughness, smarts. Your question with Shadur is, where's his ceiling? You know what I mean? Like, it's like, does he have the ability to, in 3 or 4 years, have a team competing, if you're in the AFC like the Titans are, with Joe Burrow, Josh Allen, obviously Patrick Mahomes, Lamar Jackson? Like, is he going to get you there? Or in 3 or 4 years, are you going to be looking at it and saying, yeah, he's fine, but it's not good enough? I think that's the risk with Shadur.
All right, last one for you. So apparently I pissed off Patriot fans.
I guess so, yeah. I heard your name a lot on the radio up there, so I don't know what happened.
I just said that with Vrabel, he's like Bill. You know, he's smart. He's a hardworking coach. He knows ball. He knows what he likes. He likes it, but he's like Bill. I don't know if he only trusts his coaches. He does things his way.
Insular.
He's not – Vrabel is not going to change. So when I heard him hold the press conference, with Vrabel, it's so easy to read between the lines. We call it Vrabelese when he speaks.
Yeah.
So he was asked a question at his opening press conference about Elliot Wolf, I guess who's a holdover personnel guy. And Vrabel said, when asked who has final say, he said, we'll share the same vision. I'm like, that's Vrabelese for we will share my vision.
Yeah.
And he brings in his buddies. But if you notice, what is the deal with this? Because I saw today they hired Todd Downing to be the receivers coach. So they don't hire the Vrabel buddy to be the OC because McDaniels is kind of more, I think, of a Robert Kraft guy.
Yeah.
But now he brings in Todd Downing to kind of babysit him. You know, he's the Vrabel guy who's the receivers coach. He brings in Doug Marrone to be the line coach, but then he brings in his guy, his buddy, Jason Hodling, who has no experience outside of working for Vrabel. He brings him in to be the assistant O-line coach. I was surprised he didn't bring his best buddy, the special teams coach, who's now in Miami, who was a train wreck. I'm shocked he didn't bring him with him. But, again, Brian Cowden, he's not going to be the GM, but he's number two. He's Vrabel's buddy. It's the Vrabel buddy crew, just like the Belichick buddy crew.
So you're saying the click is there.
That's the Vrabel buddy crew, just like Bill. Yeah. And the first thing that's going to happen is this. My guess is Vrabel has decided, he's told Kraft, like, hey, you want to have McDaniels, we'll get you McDaniels.
Yep.
You want to pay for Marrone, we'll get you Marrone. But at the first shot he gets to kick Elliot Wolf out, he will. And the first shot he gets to kick McDaniels out and put in Downing or Tim Kelly, he will. That's Vrabel. He is, in his opinion, the smartest coach there ever was. And
so
he might be.
When he was going to move LaFleur out to
quarterback's coach.
When he was
going to
move LaFleur out, and then he was going to promote Arthur, even if LaFleur, if LaFleur hadn't gotten the Packer job, that he would have moved on from LaFleur.
Well, the only reason Arthur got the OC job was because LaFleur was trying to take him to Green Bay.
Yeah.
So LaFleur got the head coaching job, was trying to take
Arthur,
him.
Arthur's a Vrabel guy, though.
I don't know. I've heard some people that have said that Arthur may never work for Vrabel again.
Yeah.
I mean, Dean Pease was a Vrabel guy, and now he's not.
Well, I mean, I know one thing about him. I've been around him a lot. I've known him a long time. I think he's a really good coach.
Vrabel?
Yeah.
Oh, I think Vrabel's a great coach.
I think he's a really good coach. And I think – let me turn it around on you. Did they make a mistake firing him?
I mean, I think they made a lot of mistakes. Vrabel's – it's on the – I would have fired Vrabel at the same time. I would have just completely cleaned house, gotten rid of Rand, gotten rid of Vrabel, and just started over. But, I mean, to me the –
So why would you have fired him?
Because Vrabel had been given – there was too much toothpaste out of the tube in terms of the power that they had given Vrabel. Vrabel's not a personnel guy.
Yeah.
And again, like I said, like I don't want to sound, you know, like name drop Floyd, but I worked with Floyd long enough. And he was a coach. And then he was a personnel guy. And one of the biggest things was, like, the personnel guy's job is to kind of keep the coach from screwing things up.
Yeah.
And, I understand the dichotomy between the two. I asked Vrabel when John Robinson got fired. I was like, do you think you're qualified to run the organization, to be like Pete Carroll, Sean Payton, Bill? And Vrabel, you know, Vrabel eased it and saying yes. So once that, too, like, you can't demote Vrabel at that point and say, hey, you just coach. If they could have done that, then I would have kept Vrabel. But once he had gotten, he didn't respect Rand, and he had pissed a lot of people off. To me, the moment where the Titans really went down the toilet was when they fired John Robinson in the middle of the season. I mean, who does that?
Yeah, that was weird. That was weird. And I, for whatever it's worth, I had heard a lot of it was like, Amy wanted the building, this is going to sound so stupid, that like Amy kind of wanted the building to be a happy place, and that like she didn't like the tough, hard-nosed, like, and that honestly like wound up hurting Vrabel last year in the, you know, in that hiring cycle where I think people thought he would come in and walk all over everybody, and that's why they didn't want to hire him, because a lot of these owners,
he's going
as much as they say like they will prioritize winning, it's like they also want to be involved, they also want to be able to walk in and, like, you know.
Sure, it's why Brian Schottenheimer's the coach of the Cowboys.
Oh, what a great show! What a great environment we have here! Like, that wasn't that's not that program. That program, I've been around that program since I started covering the league. Like, John Robinson and Mike Vrabel were both from that program. Like that, the Bill program is a tough, hard-nosed program that you need a certain type of player in person to operate at a high level in it.
Do you think that the Crafts are giving Vrabel the keys and saying it's all yours?
Yeah, not on paper, but, you know, I do think, like, everybody knows the score. I'll put it that way.
I love this because now we're going to see. Like, again, the boohoo Vrabel crew, if all of a sudden Vrabel goes and he wins a bunch in New England, they're going to be as loud as they've ever been.
The boohoo Vrabel crew, is that, like, a real thing in Nashville?
I mean, there's some people that boohoo about Vrabel every day.
Yeah.
I mean, but – like, they're going to be a really loud faction.
Yeah.
If Vrabel stinks in New England, there will be a lot of people.
Well, and you could, I mean, he never had a quarterback in Tennessee with the ceiling that of the one that he has now.
I mean, look, Mariota was taken second in the draft, and after the first 2 years, everyone thought he was on his way, too. So I'm like, Vrabel to develop a young quarterback, but with McDaniels there, maybe he'll do it. Albert Breer, thanks for stopping by. Sports Illustrated. Stelman & Company, 102.5 The Game.